Welcome to the Cloud Pod, where the forecast is always cloudy. We talk weekly about all things AWS, GCP, and Azure. We are your hosts,
Justin,
Jonathan,
Ryan,
and Matthew.
Episode 257, recorded for the week of April 24th, 2024. Who let the llamas out?
It's great.
It's funny the second time.
The first title with a sound effect.
Yeah, first time. And I had to go look up what llamas sound like, because I thought they sound more like a sheep. And then I heard that, and I was like, well, that's got to be part of the title. It just can't get away from not having a sound effect. How's it going, Ryan, Matt, and Jonathan?
Doing well. It's been a long week, but, hanging in there.
Recording on Fridays is always a good challenge.
Yeah. Well, sometimes you have to travel for work, and then it messes everybody up, and we have to coordinate four schedules, four kids' schedules. I think if we multiply all the kids together, I think it's probably like 12 kids' schedules.
It's a lot of schedules.
And then, everything else. So, it was unfortunate. We had to record a little later this week, but we're here. It's Friday. We're gonna make it through. So, Jonathan only made it through for part of the show because he is working on a migraine. That's a fun way to start Friday. So, all right. Well, let's do some quick follow up. So we talked about Valky as the official Redis fork. That is now basically taking over the world. As originally, it was sponsored by AWS, Ericsson, Google, Oracle, and Verizon. They've now been joined by Alibaba, Avon, Heroku, and Percona, all backing Valky as well. I've seen numerous blog posts of Valky adoption, and maybe it's not going quite so well for Redis CEO Rowan Trollope as he thought this play was going to do. Lots of sentiment that Redis basically stole the community's product from them in this move, and so a lot of backlash, more so than we've seen in other open source licensing changes.
Which is impressive considering some of the backlash that I've seen previously. I'm surprised that it's reached a whole new level, but it absolutely has.
I mean, pretty much the community just said, no, we're just not touching you anymore. And the only one that is actually backed it is Azure, as far as I know.
Yeah, because they signed that licensing agreement right away. Mm-hmm. Probably trying to think they're going to beat everyone else to market and get a license agreement placed, and then you have that argument. And unfortunately, I think it's backfired in their face too, because now they're in a situation where they're paying money for what everyone else can get for free from Valky. And I think this is one of the risks of trying to move to a non-open license when you're a pretty mature open source product that has been around for a very long time, where some of the other ones were a little bit newer, younger, if you will, and had a lot of development still to go. Terraform, still a ton of work going on there, that HashiCorp was doing. But, we'll see. We aren't talking about that news this week, by the way, because it cuts off after our news headline. But we'll talk about HashiCorp next week. That's a sad, sad story of woe. So we'll cover that next week. Well, let's move on to AI. Facebook, or Meta, as I like to be known now, launched Llama 3, the next generation of their state-of-the-art open source large language model. Llama 3 will be available on AWS, Databricks, GCP, Hugging Face, Kaggle, IBM, Watson X, which, by the way, when did Watson become Vertex and SageMaker?
Yeah.
That was a little bit of a surprise to me. Microsoft Azure, NVIDIA, Snowflake will all support the new platform, as well as hardware support from AMD, AWS, Dell, and more. It includes new trust and safety tools such as the Llama Guard 2, Code Shield, and CyberSec Eval 2 capabilities. And they plan to introduce new capabilities, including longer context windows, additional model sizes, and enhanced performance in the weeks to come. The initial two models are the 8B and the 7DB parameter variants that can support a broad range of use cases. Meta shared some benchmarks against Gemma 7B and Mistral 7B versus the Llama 8B models, and showed improvements across all major benchmarks, including math, which with Gemma 7B doing 12.2 versus 30 with Llama 3. These numbers make no sense to me. They're just bigger than the other, so I assume they're better. It also had a highly comparable performance in the 7DB model against Gemini Pro 1.5 and Claude 3 Sonnet, scoring within a few points of all of those models. But apparently, bigger is better. Again, I don't know what those numbers mean yet. I got to do some more research.
Isn't it funny how you go from an 8 billion parameter model to a 70 billion parameter model with nothing in between? Like you would have thought there would be some kind of some middle ground, maybe.
You would think so, but it doesn't seem to be the case ever.
No, but I've been playing with the 8 billion parameter model at home, and it's absolutely amazing. It blows everything else out of the water that I've tried. and it's fast and it's incredibly good. I think it's, but no, we got a Slack bot coming soon.
Very nice. So you were trying Claude out too, weren't you though? So you think it's even better than Claude, which has also been getting a lot of good reviews.
I didn't use Opus, but I used Claude Sonnet, which is their free thing. And they're quite limited in the number of tokens you can use per day. And I'm not paying them. I'm already paying for other stuff. But I haven't really done a side-by-side comparison, but the Llama 3 is really quite impressive. Like, I haven't used it for coding yet either, to be fair. But just general sort of research topics is it's really quite cool.
That's cool. Well, I'm glad to hear you're liking it so far. Keep us posted as they start releasing some of the other models that you play with too.
Oh, I'm going to pimp something really quick before I forget. So a really easy way to get started with local models is that there's a tool called LM Studio, and it is it works. It's available for Windows, Linux, and Mac. And you can just download it and run it. It downloads the models from Hugging Face for you, and it configures them all. It does everything. It can offload some of the work to GPUs if you have GPUs, or it will run in RAM with a CPU if you don't have expensive hardware. But it's the easy button for local Llama for sure, and highly recommended.
Did you have you want to put a link in the show notes to that?
I will put the link in the show notes. Yep.
You definitely did just download this and not get download the Llama 3 AP while we're on the podcast.
I saw Apple also was doing some work with some very small models that they're planning to release for on device, which is kind of interesting. So see.
Tiny as well.
They're super small.
Yeah.
Well, of course, because this is now Llama 3 week, first up, Databricks would like you to know that they now support Llama 3. They're one of the first announcements after the announcement from Meta. Databricks AI capabilities allow you to access production-grade APIs against Llama 3 and easily compare and govern Meta Llama 3 alongside other models, as well as the ability to customize your Llama 3 model to be not Llama, I guess is how that would work when you customize it. So if you are using Databricks, you can use Llama 3. Have fun. OpenAI is committed to child safety, as well as Google, with both of them releasing joint press releases around the same time as Thorn. Thorn is a nonprofit dedicated to defending child from sexual abuse, and All Tech is Human, an organization dedicated to tackling technology and society's complex problems, are all aiming to mitigate the risk of generative AI poses to children. So the commitment for OpenAI is to develop, build, and train generative AI models that proactively address child safety risks, including detection and removal of CSAM and CSEM from training data and reporting any confirmed CSAM to authorities, including incorporating feedback loops and iterative stress testing strategies in the development process and deploying solutions to address adversarial misuse. Release and distribute generative AI models after they've been trained and evaluated for child safety, protecting the process. Combat and respond to abuse content and conduct, incorporating prevention efforts, and maintaining model and platform safety by continuing to understand and respond to child safety risks actively, including removing new AI-generated CSAM, which was not something I thought about, generated by bad actors from the platform, invest in research and future technology solutions, and fight CSAM, AI-generated CSAM, and CSAM on the OpenAI platform. And Google's very closely mirrors this as well. So I appreciate the work on this, but very... Again, I just don't have the imagination of how to misuse these things, because every time I say, like, oh yeah, that's a really bad use case, like I hadn't thought of that one.
Oh, thank God they thought of blocking that. Yeah.
Yeah, that was sort of my take on this too. Like, oh no. I am glad that they're building in things, you know, the safety things, but also just the feedback in there, which I think is kind of neat for developers using AI if there's something ambiguous or you know, detected it. It got that feedback loop. So not only is it just not displaying it, but it's also helping the people developing on these large language models.
Well, and also, you know, reporting it to police. And so I imagine you could train a model to detect it, you know, and then that also will help enforcement long term. So you know, wins all around for some of that. As well as, you know, there's a subreddit where they white out photos and just show you like little pieces of hotel rooms where you're trying to define, you know, they're trying to basically determine where a photo was taken, and they're asking the public for help. You know, being able to take an AI model that's processing massive amounts of images, you should be able to hopefully start identifying some of those things faster as well. Wow. Relying less on humans to do it.
there was an app actually at one point where you would, you know, it was like upload pictures of your hotel room for the same thing for sex workers and child pornography to be able to, they were then collecting like all the pictures of just your hotel room and comparing it to pictures in the same way. So now hopefully we can do it more efficiently.
Yeah, definitely. Thorn is a, we've been very close to them for a while since we had some coworkers who won the hackathon, including Matt. Congrats, Matt.
Long time ago.
Oh, yeah. Doing doing Thorn stuff at AWS many, many moons ago. So, yeah. Good to see. OpenAI this week is also releasing more enterprise-grade features for their API customers. They now support Private Link to ensure customers' communication between Azure and OpenAI has minimal exposure to the internet. It was interesting they said minimal exposure, not just no exposure. So there's got to be something that still relies on the web for something, maybe authentication or something. They now support multi-factor authentication and single sign-on, as well as data encryption at rest using AES 256 and in transit using TLS 1.2 and role-based access controls. They will also now sign a BAA for all your healthcare companies out there who need that protection. And the new project features allow organizations to have more granular control and oversight over individual projects in OpenAI than ever before. So nice to see some enterprise capabilities coming to OpenAI.
I find the private link thing a little weird because, I mean, it's really encrypted. We're talking about HTTPS. It shouldn't matter whether it's going over the internet or not. So I think it's more a checkbox than anything else. Yeah,
more of a checkbox saying that, you know, and there have been some organizations I worked with in the past that literally just, you don't have an internet route. You don't have a 000 route in your VNet, your VPC, wherever it is. You know, you have to use private links for every single thing, for every single service. And that's the only way out to the internet. So it's probably trying to target those large enterprises that are like, it's okay to spend a third of your bill on private links.
Yeah, sure thing. And I guess the SSO is just really, it's definitely the enterprise play for large licensing deals with companies.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, I was sort of conflicted about the feature to allow an organization to have granular control and oversight of projects. And like on one hand, as a, you know, platform provider by day, I'm like, that's great. You know, there's teams that'll use that. And on the other hand, as a user, I'm like, oh, that's terrible.
I do kind of wish there was a single sign-on for families or for individuals that kind of like, like many a time I'm like, oh, it'd be nice to have like one single interface, but really don't have that existence for personal stuff. I mean, it's probably a very small IT tech market, which is why it's not a market because no human would ever use it. But I dream sometimes of that use case.
Wait, you mean like an Apple ID or a Google ID kind of thing, but for
like fully controlled by me, not a third party like Facebook. That's interesting. Or
like federated SSO as a service.
Yeah, I mean, I guess but more for a consumer use case versus a enterprise one.
But yeah. I was going to say there's like Jump Cloud, but that's targeting like medium and large businesses, but
yeah,
I'm not quite
again,
there.
Every solution that's out there is more than I want to pay for this. I mean,
yeah.
The closest I get is I do have a, you know, we have a Google account for the Cloud Pod, you know, and I can single sign out with that, but that's the closest I'm going to get to anything around this particular topic. So, all right. Well, moving on to AWS, you know, I think they have a Llama 3 announcement. Yep, they do. Now available in SageMaker Jumpstart, a machine learning ML hub that offers pre-trained models, built-in algorithms, and pre-built solutions, all leveraging Meta Llama 3. Available to you right now.
But we'll run it locally for a lot less money.
But then you can't make it enterprise grade, and Amazon won't make revenue, and they won't get their earnings. So you can't just not run it on Amazon. Think of the children.
Think of the shareholders. Sorry, the children.
Amazon Inspector now continuously monitors your Amazon EC2 instances for software vulnerabilities without installing an agent or additional software. Currently, Inspector leverages the widely deployed AWS Systems Manager agent to assess your EC2 instances for third-party software vulnerabilities. With this expansion, Inspector now offers two scan modes for EC2 scanning, a hybrid scan mode and an agent-based scan mode. In hybrid scan mode, Inspector relies on SSM agents to collect information from instances to perform the vulnerability assessment and automatically switches to agentless scanning for instances that do not have SSM agents installed or configured. For agentless scanning, Inspector takes snapshots of EBS volumes to collect software application inventory from the instance to perform vulnerability assessments. So this is clearly targeted at only Linux because I don't think that'll work for Windows.
At all. Yeah.
For agent-based scan mode, Inspector now only scans instances that have an SSM agent installed and configured, And new customers enabling EC2 scanning are configured in hybrid mode by default, while existing customers can migrate to hybrid mode by simply visiting the EC2 settings page with the Inspector console. And once enabled, Inspector automatically discovers all your EC2 instances and starts evaluating them for software vulnerabilities. So that's nice, nice, easy button there too to get this capability without having to do a lot of extra work.
Yeah. I mean, managing third-party vulnerabilities as agents is nightmarish, right? With the license management and the registration and the deregistration as you're auto-scaling and having services like that, like this one where it's built in, you're likely already running the agent if you're in the Amazon ecosystem. And how nice would it be to just not have to do one other thing? It's something that you don't have to pay attention to. It's the benefit of a managed service.
100%.
Yeah, goodbye Orca Security. You had a good run.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's sort of weird though. I wonder how many people are running EC2 instances now that don't have SSM installed. Because I mean, most of the default ones you start with from Amazon have it installed, and to remove it, you actually have to do something. So I wonder how many people wanted this versus didn't.
It's probably more like a specific version that they now needed of the SSM agent. You know, so if you're probably running an instance that's a few years old, or you haven't updated your launch template, because, you know, I was talking to actually someone where Azure has a nice advantage where you can just say, grab the latest of this thing and run it that way versus, you know, AWS, where you have to have the AMI ID or your Terraform can dynamically grab it. But if you're running an old, you know, base AMI, then it might just have an old version, which you can't use this for.
The SSM agent itself will auto update if configured. We're allowed to, but yeah, no, I'm sure there's older workloads, and there's always the use case of where you're using like an appliance AMI where, you know, but then, you know, it's going to be inspecting the EBS volume and hopefully you're covered there. So it's pretty awesome.
All right. This one, I was kind of excited about, and then I'll tell you why I'm not. If you manage many accounts and VPC resources, such as in an organization, sharing and associating many DNS resources to each VPC can present a significant burden to you. You often hit limits around sharing and association, and then you may have even built your own orchestration layers to propagate DNS configurations across your accounts and VPCs. Amazon decided there's a better way with the new Amazon Route 53 profiles, which provide the ability to unify management of DNS across all your organization's accounts and VPCs. Route 53 profiles let you define a standard DNS configuration, including Route 53 private hosted zone associations, resolver forwarding rules, and Route 53 resolver DNS firewall rule groups, and apply that configuration to multiple VPCs in the same AWS region. With profiles, you can now easily ensure that all your VPCs have the same DNS configuration without the complexity of handling separate Route 53 resources, and managing DNS across many VPCs is now as simple as managing those same settings for a single VPC. Profiles are natively integrated into the AWS Resource Access Manager, allowing you to share your profiles across accounts or with your AWS organizational account. Profiles integrate seamlessly with Route 53 private hosted zones by allowing you to create and add existing private hosted zones to your profile so your organization can have access to these same settings when the profile is shared across your accounts. And this is where the rub comes in. For each profile that you create, it costs you 75 cents per profile per hour, which is just a little bit over $500 a month. And for that price, you can attach them up for up to 100 VPC attachments with an additional fee for every VPC over the 100. And that is per profile. So that is a hefty cost to avoid a little bit of toil.
Yeah, no, I had the same reaction. Like, you know, because I've orchestrated this, you know, a bunch of times and, you know, like, cool. I like easy buttons where I don't have to do that anymore. But yeah, that's it. This seems maybe following the Amazon tactic of pricing it, prohibitively high for the early adopters and before they can roll it out in mass. So hopefully we see a price cut on this eventually.
Yeah, I would hope so. I mean, like I get it when you do the initial setup that there's some work, but then the value after the initial setup can't be there.
Yeah.
So it just doesn't make sense.
And you'd like to see a model based on, you know, number of queries and, you know, or something along those lines, something where it's actually like, you know, based on usage other than just time. Like I get, you know, having a small charge that's per hourly based, you know, to get a baseline. This seems a little much.
Yeah.
It's kind of weird. It's a static configuration. Once it's in place, it's in place.
Pretty much.
And so I mean, I guess you're monitoring it to make sure it doesn't drift, but an hourly charge for that.
You can say that about a lot of things, right?
Yeah, no, I'm not jazzed by the price model.
Yeah.
I mean,
I'm not going to disagree with that, but you can say that about most things. So like, here, once it's up, it's up. How much are you really doing between your VNet and BVCs once it's up? Once have you changed the setting? So like,
I mean, there is something happening though. Like traffic is routing. Like, I mean, again, like you're paying already on a private.
There's still traffic here,
but you're already paying for that on private hosted zones. You're already paying for that in Route 53 charges. You're already paying for all of that, you know, DNS queries against the zone. Like you're already being charged for all of that. So you're getting charged now an extra fee, which is pretty steep, to basically give you an easy button to make it easier. I mean, if this was 5 cents per profile hour, wouldn't care.
Yeah.
Yeah. 550.
Even if it was
dollars an hour per month, yeah, it's a lot.
Even if it was like 5 cents per hour plus like a charge for number of transactions, like up to 1 million transactions was another amount, like they do for a lot of services, that would make sense to me. But yeah.
Yeah. So I do hope this one comes down in price. You know, the other way that we did this in a prior life was we just created subdomains and then we delegated subdomains to each team's Route 53. Now we paid a lot of money, probably in extra hosted zones that we had to support. But again, I think a hosted zone is only like 10 or 15 cents. 50 cents. Yeah. So it's not
50 cents a month.
A month. Yeah.
Yeah.
Not per hour.
We didn't notice. I know when we turned it on.
Yeah. No one complained about the bill. They will complain about the bill for this one, perhaps.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
The NAT gateway cost is still too high.
Yeah,
versus hosted zone.
NAT gateway has been a problem forever. So I'm convinced they'll never fix it just because it's a profit margin machine for them.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Bad egress traffic. Unless you're quitting Amazon, as we now know. You get a credit. Thanks, EU. All right. Moving on to Bedrock. Guess what? Bedrock supports.
Is it...
Play the clip.
Yes, Bedrock is now supporting Llama 3, but a bunch of other stuff as well. So they have new custom model imports, letting you bring proprietary models to Bedrock and take advantage of Bedrock's capabilities. Guardrails for Bedrock, which provides customers with best-in-class technology to help them effectively implement safeguards tailored to their application needs and aligned with their AI policies. And additional model choices, including Titan text embeddings, Titan image generator, and the new Llama 3 and Cohere models, all for you. There's a quote here from Dr. Swami Sivasubramanian. Amazon Bedrock is experiencing explosive growth with tens of thousands of organizations of all sizes and across all industries choosing it as the foundation for their generative AI strategy because they can use it to move from experimentation to production more quickly and easily than anywhere else. Customers are excited by Amazon Bedrock because it offers enterprise-grade security and privacy, wide choice of leading foundational models, and the easiest way to build generative AI applications. With today's announcements, they continue to innovate rapidly for our customers by doubling down on our commitment to provide them with the most comprehensive set of capabilities and choice of industry-leading models, further democratizing generative AI innovation at scale. And Google and Azure and OpenAI just said, what? Easiest? I don't know about that.
Yeah, that's not what I've heard about Bedrock.
Yeah, it's not what I've heard either.
Yeah.
Also, agents for Bedrock, one I missed, sorry, were also announced to make it simple and easy to configure.
Yeah, I don't think they're using the word simple correctly.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I particularly like Bedrock when you have to go and enable all of the LLMs that you actually want to try because it doesn't just make them available to you. You have to like opt into most of them because you have to sign sub licenses for things like Cohere's models. It's fun.
Yeah. Yeah, haven't used it directly yet, but
I've only used it to play around to see how I liked it when it first came out, but I haven't touched it again in a while because Google and OpenAI are better. Uh-huh. But I could run my Llama 3 model there, so I mean, that's a plus. You know, if there wasn't other options where I could run Llama 3, I could do it in Bedrock.
Well, only there were other options for Llama 3.
Only if there's other options.
Do you know what's more old school than blowing on a Nintendo cartridge to make it work? Manually creating individual policies to achieve least privilege in your cloud. Leave old habits in the past, and with a single click, lock down access to sensitive permissions and services without disrupting DevOps. With the new Cloud Permissions Firewall from Sunry Security, you can easily restrict excessive permissions from human and machine identities, quarantine unused identities, and restrict specific regions and unused services with a click of a button. Start a 14-day free trial for Sonry's Cloud Permissions Firewall at sonry.co/cloudpod. That's sonrai.co/cloudpod.
Amazon RDS Performance Insights will now collect the query execution plans for the resource-intensive SQL queries in Amazon's RDS for SQL Server and store them over time. It helps identify it if a change in the query execution plan is the cause of the performance degradation or a stalled query. And the query execution plan is a sequence of steps the database engine uses to access relational data. It's also annoying that this isn't just built into SQL Server, that it would keep history of stored of SQL plans forever. So I do appreciate that Amazon has built this, but come on, Microsoft, you can do better.
Yeah, I don't have enough SQL experience, but this sounds like a good thing. Like,
oh, it's great. Why it doesn't exist in SQL Server natively, I don't understand. And then if Amazon can start using like predictive analytics on top of these query plans to say when things are going to break, like, oh, your query plan's most likely going to change when you cross a certain threshold of data, because that's what something that happens in SQL query plans. Like, they just change one day because data changed in a way that the SQL thought it was better a different way. If you could do predictive on that stuff, it'd be really helpful, because many an outage I've been involved in where the plan changed unexpectedly.
And you can do it in like the studio, like the SQL studio, right? You can do that, but not directly on like in on your database, I guess. Like, it's confusing to me. Yeah.
Mm. Well, moving on to GCP, Cloud Vertex AI has Llama 3.
You would think it wouldn't be funny, but it still is.
It's so funny.
It's a sound effect, or we're going to spit on the one of the two.
That's what famous was spitting
as well.
If we had if we recorded the video and we had like people who could like interact with this in video, we could have people throw water on you guys. That would be to mimic that.
We could think we're all in different houses doing this.
Yeah, I'm sure Jonathan can work out a bot. It's fine. In time for Llama 4. All right, direct VPC egress on Cloud Run is now generally available. This apparently missed the Google Next deadline by a week. The Cloud Run team is pleased to announce the general availability of direct VPC egress for Cloud Run. This feature enables your Cloud Run resources to send traffic directly to a VPC network without proxying it through the serverless VPC access connector, making it easier to set up, faster, and with lower costs. I bet Ryan has something to say about that. In fact, direct VPC egress delivers approximately twice the throughput compared to both VPC connectors and the default Cloud Run internet egress path, offering up to 1 gigabyte per second per instance.
Yeah, this is just one of those usability things when you get all excited to use Cloud Run and then you realize you can't do anything with it because you have all this other configuration that you have to do. And that's just to get to the internet. And then are you trying to get it into your other environment? It's this whole other peering nonsense, you know, like just awful. This just makes it difficult to adopt. And, you know, like you didn't get my attention in the first 5 minutes, I'm probably not going to use that solution. You know, this goes a long way. Like, I assume that it's still a little bit difficult, as usually managed services in Google and cross-project communication is. But hopefully this is just, you know, what you want, which is more, you know, akin to what you have with AWS Lambda, where you're just configuring the VPC that it talks from and you're done.
It kind of amazes me that this wasn't built in. Like, Cloud Run's been out for a while. Like, I know I don't use Google, but like, that feels like a, maybe not day one feature, but like, I don't know, day 60, 90, something like that. Not like years later.
You've been too kind. It should have been a GA feature.
I mean, I think a lot of things should be GA features on AWS, and they're like, no, we're good. Mm-hmm. So, you know,
I mean, Google, 2019. Google got distracted by AI. Like, you know, that's an excuse for everything. But yeah, it is a weird, you know, and then there's actually another model of out egress that is slower. It's sort of weird to me, too. I'm like, huh. So you could do it before, but it was in a slow method, so it wasn't very fast. And now this is giving you faster performance.
So what this speaks to is the complexity of Kubernetes networking, right? Because Cloud Run under the covers is Knative and running on Kubernetes, and they built all this thing and then it couldn't talk to anything, right? And then so in order to you could, you know, open up to the internet and have it exposed out. But if you wanted to talk to any of your other resources, you just couldn't. And then they developed this, the serverless VPC, which is this still managed by Google outside of your own environment. But then you could like do this other hop nonsense to get into your own network. And it just wasn't performant and it was difficult and complex to set up. And so this is, you know, like that wasn't going to be, that was a stopgap solution, I think, from the beginning. That was my guess. And so this is the final one. But yeah, no, this has burned me where I'm just like, this solution better be better than what they provided before.
It's amazing it's just amazing how spoiled I feel like we were on AWS, where I'm like, well, this thing that we do, and it maybe it's like the features that we're just used to and we're used to architecting around, but look at the other clouds at times, I'm like, you can't do that. Or like, I have to do it in this weird way. And I'm like, I came from Azure to AWS and did the reverse. Would I be thinking about these things the opposite or not? Like where AWS is weird? I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, there's definitely things that I question quite often about Google. Like you were the third mover. You saw how Amazon screwed this up. And then you saw how Azure screwed it up. And yet you didn't learn from either of them. You just went down a different path that was terrible. Like, I don't know what you were thinking. So like, just not do the dumb parts that those two did and make something that's in the middle of those two and you'd be fine. But no, we're going to go reinvent water. Like it makes no sense.
Like, when you're skiing, don't stare at the tree because you go right into the tree. And that's what Google and even Azure have done, is like, they go right into the tree. It's like, avoid the tree, look somewhere else.
I mean, after I saw Teams, which had one job, copy Slack, Azure makes sense. It had one job, copy AWS, which means they did nothing that AWS did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I will say my still favorite feature of Azure is I can just search for any resource from the search bar, which is nice.
I mean,
surprisingly useful.
You can do that now in AWS. You couldn't do it in the past, but now you can. And you can do it in Google too.
You can.
All right. Well, there goes my favorite feature of Azure.
It's still your favorite feature because it's the only one that you know about.
Azure had it first.
And you don't know that Amazon has it because you're not using Amazon now. So to you, it's still the best feature. So sorry to break your bubble.
I haven't used the AWS. I must just by default never try it because, you know, used to it not being there.
I would give you access to my Amazon account, but I feel like you would just make fun of my configuration. And so I can't do that.
So. I mean, I have my own. I make fun of my own. It's fine. You look at it, I'm like, why did I do this?
Yeah, if Jonathan or Ryan or you were like, hey, I want to come help with the CloudPod website, I'd be like, sure, I guess I could do that.
To be fair, I think all of our local setups are like that because it's like I do this all day and I do not hold the same standards for my local
setup. I mean, mine is somewhat related. Like Terraform did set it up at one point, but I think I've clicked off my way away from that now pretty well. Oh, so
100% did I click away from my CloudFormation.
Yeah,
problem one, CloudFormation.
Well, I didn't do it in CloudFormation. I wasn't that dumb, but yeah. I did do it in an early version of Terraform, which was fun. You know, every time Terraform broke the changes from like 0.5 to where we're at now, because every time I would want to modify the Terraform, it would be broken in horrible ways, and I had to go like relearn everything I did before, and then learn that they changed it completely. And yeah, always good times to update Terraform you don't touch in a while. Like it rots pretty quick.
Yep. No, that's why I did CloudFormation. I'm like, this will be better. It wasn't.
It wasn't.
No, actually, my VPC, which is probably circa like 2016, I think is CloudFormation.
Mm-hmm. And that's about the same era that mine is. Mine exists from.
Maybe a year or two before that, somewhere in that time frame.
I'm pretty sure I clicked off the NAT gateway.
I don't think I even have a NAT gateway because I was too cheap.
It's on my list to do. On my personal account, I only put everything in public. So I didn't have to worry about NAT gateways because I didn't want to pay for it.
Definitely what I've done.
Yeah, but I know like in another account that I manage for a friend, he does have a NAT gateway, but it is not regional. It is not AZ, multi-AZ. It's single AZ NAT gateway.
Yeah,
me too.
I was like, I don't want to make you pay more than that. So, and I probably should go in and like, there's an open source Terraform module that basically creates a very simple NAT gateway that runs on the EC2 instance. I should probably switch that over for him. I could save him a little bit of money. Maybe I'll do that someday. Not soon. All right. Well, moving on to the next announcement. In today's cloud-first world, customers need a simple and highly available connectivity solution, says Google. Many customers access Google Workspaces, cloud, and APIs using direct peering, a solution designed for carrier-level network operators. These operators have in-house expertise to manage the peering connectivity, which can require complex routing designs. And because of the complexity, not all customers want to do this work. At the same time, customers also access latency-sensitive secure access service edge solutions or are migrating to SD-WAN solutions hosted on GCP using the internet as a transport. Customers need to know where internet... Customers need to know where internet service providers are connected to Google's network with appropriate level of redundancy and HA. And to solve this, they are announcing Verified Peering Provider Program, a new offering that simplifies connectivity to Google's network. The Verified Peering Provider Program identifies ISPs that offer enterprise-grade internet services and have met multiple technical requirements, including diverse peering connectivity to Google, so you as a customer don't have to.
I want to love this, but then when you read deep into this, you realize that it's just a site that lists all their existing providers, their locations, and their, you know, resiliency offerings. And then you still have to go through all the setup of creating direct connect and working with your providers. So like yes, it does make something easier, but they did like the thing that's not really my problem. Like, yes, it's a couple phone calls and meetings to get all that lined up. But then the hard part is managing that connection over time. Like, they didn't fix any of that. I just hate the wording that they used when they're like,
yeah. But you don't have to send a questionnaire to the ISP saying, hey, do you have redundant paths? Because you know, because they got the certification from Google.
You know what I haven't really bothered with is that sort of level of questions, because at a certain point you can rely on that just existing.
Yeah. Like, are you giving me an SLA? If so, I would like you to meet the SLA. And if not, I'll say, why didn't you meet the SLA? And if you say, well, we didn't have redundant paths to Google, I'll be like, that's going to suck for you. You're going to owe me money. Thank you. Now, if it's mission critical, you probably want to have a slightly different level of care about that. But yeah, I mean, it's an easy button.
Well, and almost everyone has it, right? Like, yeah, they already have. They don't have it in all locations. There's caveats to everything, of course, but like, it's the exception, not the rule.
100%.
So it's the Angie's List of peering providers.
The Angie's List. That's excellent.
Yeah.
All right. Well, now it's time to pick on Microsoft. Sorry, Microsoft.
So easy.
All right. So if you guys remember, sometime in 2023, I think it was over the summer, Exchange was hacked by a threat actor. And we talked about it here on the show a couple times. They got a key somehow and it was really unclear and Microsoft was being really cagey about it. And that has now forced the CISA to basically do a full review of the attack and everything. And the report is very unkind to Microsoft and their practices. The executive summary alone is pretty damning, and there are even more interesting tidbits in the details of this, but they concluded that the intrusion was preventable and should never have occurred. They also concluded that Microsoft security culture is inadequate and requires an overhaul, particularly in light of the company's centrality, the technology ecosystem, and the level of trust customers place in the company to protect their data and operations. They reached this conclusion based on 7 points. Number one, the cascade of Microsoft's avoidable errors that allowed the intrusion to succeed. Number two, Microsoft's failure to detect the compromise of its own cryptographic crown jewels on its own, relying instead on a customer to reach out to identify anomalies the customer had observed in their data. The board's assessment of the security practices at other cloud service providers comparatively to Microsoft, which maintains security controls that they did not. Microsoft's failure to detect a compromise of an employee's laptop from a recently acquired company prior to allowing it to connect to Microsoft's corporate network in 2021. Microsoft's decision not to correct promptly its public statements about the incident, including a corporate statement that Microsoft believed it had determined the likely root cause of the intrusion, when in fact it still has not, even though Microsoft acknowledges to the board in November 2023 that its September 6, 2023 blog post about the root cause was inaccurate. It did not update that post until March 12, 2024, as the board was concluding its review, and only after the board repeatedly questioned Microsoft about its plan to issue a correction. The board's observation of a separate incident disclosed by Microsoft in January 2024, the investigation, which was not in the purview of the board's review, however, revealed a compromise that allowed a different nation-state actor to access highly sensitive Microsoft corporate email accounts, source code repos, and internal systems, and how Microsoft's ubiquitous and critical products, which underpin essential services that support national security, foundations of the economy, and public health safety require the company to demonstrate the highest standards of security, accountability, and transparency. The board believes that to resolve this, the Microsoft board and CEO need to three-dimensionally focus on the company's security culture and develop and share publicly a plan with specific timelines to make fundamental security-focused reforms across the company and its full suite of products. The board recommends that the CEO hold senior officers accountable for delivery against the plan, and in the interim, Microsoft leaders should consider directing internal teams to deprioritize feature development across the company's cloud infrastructure and product suite until substantial security improvements have been made to preclude resource competition. And all I can say is, ow. And Charlie Bell, you got a lot of work to do.
Yeah. How much of this is like, or, you know, I don't know if it's been there long enough for it to you know, fix some of these issues that are since, but, you know, because it was, he started after the breach, but oof, this is, that sucks.
I think it really emphasizes the need to separate production implementations of software and the development of the software. You know, having access to source code, it shouldn't be the end of the world. But yeah, getting the access they did to the data they did is completely unacceptable.
Yeah. I will say, and we'll talk about earnings next week, but he did, you know, the CEO of Microsoft did comment about it at their earnings and how important it is for the company to switch to security. So they're definitely taking note of this, and they seem like they're taking it seriously. We'll detail more about that next week. But Microsoft, that's the first Microsoft response I've seen to the CISA report since it was published it was published right before Google Next, and we just have a chance to talk about it today. But yeah, now in punching down on your competitor, Amazon decided to respond to this. And they posted one of their quick little blog posts basically saying Amazon is aware of the recent Cyber Safety Review Board report regarding the 2023 Microsoft Online Exchange issue. We are not affected by the issue described in this report, and no customer action is required. And then they go on to say at AWS, security is top priority. With every AWS customer benefits from the fact that we have the most operational experience of any cloud provider, yada, yada, yada. To learn more, please refer to our blog post, How the Unique Culture of Security at AWS Makes a Big Difference blog post, which is probably 3,000 words on the security priorities that they have, including security is built into their organizational structure, security is everyone's job, and distributing security expertise and ownership across AWS is a thing, and scaling security through innovation. And I just, it feels dirty. I'm going to say it, you know.
It's unnecessary for sure.
Unnecessary for sure.
Yeah.
And so, you know, boo to you, Amazon. Like, yeah. Yes, I know you're losing an AI right now, but you know, doesn't mean you need to punch them when they're not secure.
Yeah.
And like half the world, or if not 80% of the world, runs on these couple providers. So like, you really think you're going to win a customer over by an article like this? Like, I just don't understand the point of it. I mean, I guess the first part kind of makes sense. We were not affected by it, but like,
yeah, but then after that, the blog post wasn't necessary.
Mm-hmm. Right. Like, you know, cool, great. Like, what are you really proving?
And I can see Brian, the blog post, because you're maybe customers are asking like, hey, you know, we saw this Microsoft CISA thing. Are you guys impacted by that? You know, not understanding the context of it. And that's a fair to put a blog post out to avoid, you know, or to point someone to somebody and say, hey, yeah, we've already responded to that. It's not impacting us. But yeah, it's really interesting.
Did Amazon move to O365 like a year or two ago? Like there was a big billion-dollar deal or something.
Yeah.
Like, I guess I can see that aspect of it, but yeah, the second aspect wasn't needed.
Yeah. So after that beatdown of Microsoft and then punching by Amazon, I thought we should have a good story for Microsoft, which there wasn't any. So we're going to take one of their puff pieces about industrial AI innovations, and we're going to talk about it. So, you know, this is thanks to us feeling guilty for Microsoft. Manufacturing faces ongoing challenges with supply chain disruptions, changes in consumer demand, workforce shortages, and the presence of data silos. And these issues are making it crucial for the industry to adapt and change. And the way, of course, a manufacturing company that's been around for hundreds of years can change is through AI, of course. The solution by enabling companies to change their business models fundamentally and approach to a pervasive industry challenges, AI acts as a catalyst for innovation, efficiency, and sustainability in manufacturing. There's several key benefits that AI apparently brings to the table. Number one is enhanced time to value and operations resilience, with AI solutions helping streamline processes, reducing the time from production to market. Cost optimization to help manufacturing and factories reduce costs by hopefully getting rid of people, because that's what AI does. Improving productivity with AI tools, empowering frontline workers by simplifying the data queries and decision-making processes, and thereby enhancing productivity and job satisfaction, or getting your pink slip. Innovation in factory operations with new AI and data solutions to facilitate the creation of intelligent factories. And overall, Microsoft is looking to help by leveraging data solutions like Fabric and Copilot, which are designed to unify operational technology and information technology data and accelerate AI deployment into your manufacturing space. So, you know, congrats.
Good job, Microsoft, taking control of the industrial AI revolution.
Indeed. Well, moving on to Cloudflare. Cloudflare has support for Llama 3. And that is it for another fantastic week here at the cloud. Maybe next week with less llamas. We'll see. It might become a new
probably not.
Yeah. You might need to get a llama sticker. I don't know. Like, it was fun. Can't wait for Llama 4 and we get to do this again. It's gonna be great. Something to look forward to. Come on, Meta, pick up the pace.
Yeah.
There was a kids' TV show in Australia, Llamas in Pajamas.
Yes, I remember Llamas in Pajamas.
Yeah.
And it's talking about llamas and going up the stairs, right? That's part of the song, or is that a different llama thing? I don't know.
You think that's a llama, llama, red pajama?
Yeah, there's that too. Yeah, lots of llama things. All right. Well, I'll talk to you guys next week.
See you later.
Bye, everybody.
Bye, everyone.
And that's the Week in Cloud. We'd like to thank this week's sponsor, Sunry. Check out a 14-day free trial at sunry.co/cloudpod. Check out our website, the home of the CloudPod, where you can check out our newsletter, Slack team, send feedback, or ask questions at thecloudpod.net, or tweet at us with #poundthecloudpod. Well, I mean, we got to talk about Amazon one more time tonight. And more on Amazon retail side. Did you guys know that that Just Walk Out technology that we think is amazing and awesome is a lie?
I suspected.
Yeah, we did too.
I know I was always impressed when I got a demo of the Walk Out technology, where you just walk into a store, scan your phone or your palm, and then you walk around the store grabbing stuff and throwing it into your bag and then walking out. And then at some point, you know, relatively soon, you are allegedly going to, you know, get a receipt that says you bought all those things. But all lies, built on a house of lies, similar to Tesla's full self-driving car, maybe. I don't know. Jonathan disagrees, but Just Walk Out is supposed to let customers grab what they want, like I said. And Amazon wanted to track what customers took with a purely via AI-powered video surveillance. The system just took a phone scan at the door and shoppers will be billed later. Reportedly, though, there are a ton of tech problems and Amazon is still struggling with it for 6 years since the initial announcement. And the report indicated that Amazon had more than 1,000 people in India working on Just Walk Out in mid-2022, whose job was to manually review transactions and labeling images from videos to train the ML model. Training is part of any project, but apparently even after years working on it, they have been unable to deliver on the promise. And Amazon will be switching to a more reasonable cashierless format, including shopping carts with built-in checkout screens and scanners. And customers can leisurely scan items as they throw them in their Amazon Dash cart. And the screen will show a running total of their purchases. That does not sound like Just Walk Out technology, especially when I heard the Amazon Dash cart costs a lot of money, so you're not allowed to take it out of the store. You have to, like, once you purchase it, you got to transfer it to another cart to take it out to your car. So not so great. But this is not the first time I've ran into an AI project that was built on lies. So, you know, I just had more hope in Amazon, who's trying to sell you a lot of AI technology right now. To come out and admit this now seems like a bad timing in the market in general.
Yeah, especially all the, you know, touting of their AI and video work for, you know, making their workforce more effective and protecting against COVID that they announced. You really wanted this to be not smoke and mirrors, but it also, like, with all the reports of, like, you know, secret shoppers and people feeling like they were being followed around the store and, you know, like, looked like other shoppers, but really wasn't, you know. He kind of felt like there was something up with this. So it's like, sucks.
Yeah, I got to wonder if there just wasn't enough data to train properly, because, you know, when it comes to self-driving, they have billions of miles of video which they train the models on. Yeah. And I just can't imagine there is ever enough people and ever enough footage to actually train this thing on sensibly.
Well, and why focus it only on visual data too, right? Like, you have other options. Like, you know, like, you can detect weight changes, you can do RFID in the products, you can... They just limited it to just video analysis, and I never really understood that.
Weight changes. Unexpected item in bagging area.
Yeah, well, oh, not everything's positive, I suppose, but...
I hate that. The self-checkout station thing. I'm like, yeah. I know, you're just so stupid. Stop it.
Yeah. It was a weird thing to try and pioneer, I think. Like, what was broken about collecting the stuff you wanted and then having somebody ring it up and then you pay them?
Well, I mean, based on recent press, Amazon doesn't like people. They don't like employees. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. They don't like paying people. Okay, fair enough.
I mean, on one hand, I kind of get it, because it's sort of like, you know, like, every time I have to wait in line for a cashier, I think about Amazon's technology. Like, look, that's really, I don't really mind being checked out by a person. I do mind checking myself out, weirdly. But yeah, it's really the line, and that sort of is where I think the efficiency is. But it's, yeah.
Yeah, I like the self-checkout, personally. I find it faster than waiting in line or anything else.
If they were more reliable, but like you said, unexpected item and bagging cart, you know, like, weird things happening with things that aren't in the system, so it won't scan. You know, those things happen everywhere, but getting it resolved in those self-checkouts is difficult.
Well, maybe it'll come back someday in the future when people figure out technology. But yeah, I still feel like we're dangerously close to like a lot of FUD around Gen AI happening and the trough of disillusionment happening very quickly. Mm-hmm. And like, stories like this don't help. It's going to be interesting reckoning in the economy as all these companies have, you know, laid people off with saying AI is making them more efficient. And I'm like, is it? Or are you just hoping it's going to be? And then are you going to be suffering in another year from now when, you know, things aren't working in your organization? I just saw an article from Spotify CEO where operationally they laid 1,500 people off in G&A and they struggled for 4 months, mm-hmm. they said, trying to figure it out. And in some cases companies are overbloated, but I wonder if the reality of AI just is not panning out yet and if that's going to hit the economy later this year.
So anecdotally, I spent the majority of this last week on coding projects and really utilizing Copilot for the first time in coding. And it is... like, I've dabbled with it and it was kind of neat, but when you're trying to use it for real, it's in your way. Like, it kept recommending things that were just crazy talk. I had to turn that off. And then when I'd ask it questions, it wouldn't be able to answer questions. And so it's like, it didn't actually, other than the basics of like, do a function that compares these objects, like, it really wasn't any help. And so I, after using it for realsies for a couple of days, like, have completely changed my opinion on those code enablements. So it's, I think you're right. I think the disillusionment's coming.
It's a trust issue, isn't it? It's like, if you can trust them to do a job, that's great. But if you can't trust them, then you have to go and check it. And if you have to go and check it, you may as well do it yourself. Mm-mm.
My biggest problem was the interaction. It interrupted. It was very, like, it would take my cursor over and it would move things around. And, you know, that was really the biggest problem I had with it. Like, give me a little signal that I can click on and then I'll look or something like that if you've got a recommendation. But, you know, some of that is just implementation through the IDE, but also like it's the recommendations weren't good either.
Through anecdotes, I've heard Duet, now Gemini Assist or whatever, mm-hmm. is a much better actually at the coding mm-hmm. stuff. And the fact that it if you have a bunch of repos on your laptop or GitHub or whatever, you know, Git repos on your machine, it will detect and scan across all of those. Then it can actually do references across Git projects, you know, if they're a part of the same application or same organization. So it's got a couple of capabilities that I think GitHub is maybe just a little bit behind on implementing. Because I would have thought the same thing would happen with Copilot, where they would have expanded it to now cover your entire GitHub org, all projects, and be able to kind of do auto completes from all that stuff. So you know, hearing what I'm hearing about Duet slash now Gemini Assist, I suspect that Copilot's just feeling the age of being still on, you know, OpenAI 1.0 or whatever they originally built that on. And I'm kind of expecting something will come out maybe at Ignite around improvements to it, but maybe check out Gemini Assist since we have licenses for that too.
So I've been, before doing GitHub Copilot, I was using Duet AI, now Gemini Code Assist. And my experience also mirrors that, whereas like I had the recommendations I was getting were much more usable and smaller. Like it was simpler recommendations where it was a little easier to do the trust. It was still sort of interruptive, but you know, because it wasn't recommending crazy things, it wasn't as bad.
Do you find it helps at all, like when you start you want to start a new bit of code and it kind of gives you kind of scaffolding and that stuff? Mm-hmm.
That's very effective, and that's what I had dabbled with previously, and so I really liked that ability, and so I definitely use it that way. Where I want it to be awesome is when I no longer have to go to Stack Overflow. Right.
Well, I think that's one of the things I've seen a demo of. I don't know, maybe not on GitHub, but in Gemini, I've seen where you can highlight code and have it explain it to you.
Mm-hmm. You can do that in Copilot as well. And I never really had it explain the code to me because I was writing it, so I didn't need that. But I did ask it questions like, how do I do this? Or write me a function to do this. And didn't really get a lot of usable things. Even simple things like resolve this import error, right?
Maybe the difference is between Copilot and some of the other tools is like you don't have the opportunity to explain the context of what you're trying to do. It's just a coding window. Mm-hmm. And you can put a comment in like, this function is supposed to do X. Mm-hmm. Whereas with Claude or ChatGPT or something, you can write a whole paragraph. You can say, you know, I'm this engineer working for this company in this industry, and this is the context, this is the background of the problem I'm trying to solve, and I'd like you to write some code that does a thing. And it has a huge amount of information to base its output on. And I think that's kind of missing in Copilot in a way.
You can prompt it, but you can follow up your prompts for more context and changes, but it still doesn't have the same, I don't know. It's difficult to have a conversation with it. Like, you know, I either want it like almost like dictation where I'm asking it to do things and it's writing the code for me.
Yep.
Or it's making recommendations that are hopefully a little less disruptive and a little bit more accurate. When I decide to print a dictionary, I don't need you to automatically define every key in the dictionary as a printout function as a suggestion, right? Like that's one of the things it would give me, like print 100 different statements. I'm like, don't do that. Like I will murder you. Because it completely takes your entire screen, right? Like it's just
awesome. So like ideally, how would it be architected so it could help you do your job better? Like if you think like a clippy thing that says, hey, I see you're trying to do this, but maybe try a different way.
I mean, I'd like a smaller version of that, right? Like a little, like there's already a little icon when it's enabled, like just change the color when it's got a suggestion. There's already a prompt window, like that part works well. I just didn't like the answers I was getting. But yeah, something that's not, you know, like it really wants to, because it's trying to show you what it wants to do, which makes sense to me. It just comes up with this function, and when it's something crazy like that, like you're trying to print out the first key to see the structure of, you know, an element in the dictionary, and it just automatically populates a version, and if you hit the wrong key combination, it's applied it, you know, to the thing, because it uses tab for completion, which drives me insane. Since I'm developing on Python, white space is kind of crucial, you know, like
indeed.
I wonder if that's configurable too. I don't know, let's see.
Not sure.
If you download LM Studio, which I think it should.
I'll play with that, yeah.
You can also download CodeLlama, which is optimized for coding, Python, JavaScript, whatever, Angular, whatever, things like that. I've had a little bit of a play with it, but not as much as I have with the regular Llama 3 model. But like, it's getting incredibly good. Mm-hmm. It's like rubbing my hands with glee, kind of excitedly. It's like I feel like we're close to huge projects being spat out by these machines now. I think because the context windows are still quite small, I think you still need to be an architect on the outside and then break it down, break the work into chunks and to pass it to model. But we're very close to being able to do away with a lot of software engineering work.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sort of doing it by duress, right? So like maybe that's part of it as well. Like my attitude is sort of like, you know, it's like get this out tomorrow and you know, Brandon was out. So it's sort of like, okay.
Yeah.
So the code llama was Meta's code llama, which is built on a lot of PHP code, I think, too. So
yeah.
That's I'm gonna check that out. I just downloaded it, just opened it. Now I'm downloading models. So I'm gonna play with this for sure.
Yeah, it's really cool. And it's amazingly fast. Like, I mean, I don't have, I mean, this PC is what, like 3 years old maybe? It's got a NVIDIA 3070 in it with 8 gig of memory. It's not like huge. It's not massive. It's not and the H100 that I want for my birthday.
I downloaded one for Mac. I'm hoping to maybe get my M1 to sweat a little bit. Because I don't push it to its max very often anymore. So
I'll download it on this thing, and if it dies, I get to buy a new computer.
Nice.
It's 10 years old. It's time. So
you should just take it by the hot tub and drop it in the hot tub. Mm-hmm. They'll get you a new one too.
Yeah. Problem, as much as I want new things, I'm also a cheap bastard, and I'm the only one telling me I can't have it.
That's a different problem I can't help you with. Yeah. But all right, guys. Well, I think that's it for this week, and we will talk to you next week here at the Cloud Pod.
Yeah.
All right. See you later.
I'm going to whip that llama's ass. Yeah.